last week we had a discussion about the mitzvah of Ma'aser Ksavim and how that ties into our lives and how we're supposed to understand our obligation in terms of the Ma'aser Ksavim that we give. This week I'd like to continue on the discussion about tzedakah in general. And the shiur is really going to have two components. The first part of the shiur is going to be about why it is that we do not recite a bracha on the mitzvah of tzedakah. It seems to be it's a mitzvah like all others. And just like we recite a bracha on all the other mitzvahs that we do throughout the year, we should recite a bracha when giving tzedakah as well. That's the first part of the shiur. The second part of the shiur is regarding a comment that somebody made last week. What do we do when we have money that came through illegal sources? Money that was either stolen, money that was perhaps not accumulated in the proper way. What is our perspective with regard to taking that kind of money for the purposes of charity? Do we have a right to accept it? Should we be accepting of it? And I can tell you that personally I cringe when I drive by buildings on yeshivas and on shuls and on all kinds of Jewish institutions where they have names of people who are not such honest people and who really perhaps had many legal issues along the way. Is that something that should bother us, or is it something that we should just turn away from? So I think it's a very important discussion because unfortunately we're confronted with it all the time and we have to understand what the halacha says about it. Let's begin with the first part of the question, a little bit less of a juicy issue. Why is it that we don't have a bracha on the mitzvah of tzedakah? So the Rashba in a tshuva famously quotes from some other Rishonim that the reason why we do not make a bracha on giving tzedakah is because when you have something that is contingent on another person participating together with you in order to fulfill the mitzvah. So for example here, the mitzvah of tzedakah. I cannot do the mitzvah myself without having somebody receive the money. So what would happen? I was talking to my kids tonight about what the shiur was going to be about. And I said, the first question we're going to ask in the shiur is, why is there no bracha on tzedakah? So my son had a great idea. He said, perhaps the reason why is because you don't really have an obligation to give the tzedakah. If you have a lot of money, so then you have to give. But he said, it's not like lulav, where you have to make a bracha on the lulav because everybody has to get up. I like that reason. I think that was a very interesting suggestion, especially from a 8-year-old. It's not a bad idea. So that's not what the Rishonim say. Maybe some Rishonim say that, but the Rashba writes, the reason why is because this is a mitzvah that is contingent on someone else. Over here he says, when I come to the mitzvah of shaking lulav, I know that it's up to me to do the entirety of the mitzvah, as long as I stay healthy and I don't, God forbid, have a heart attack in between the time that I made the bracha and I go ahead and do the mitzvah. But if all things are considered to be stable and normal, so I make a bracha, and then I go ahead and I perform the mitzvah. And the assumption is that I'm going to have the ability to perform that mitzvah the way it should be done. However, he says over here, what is going to happen if I see an ani in the street, and then I start rummaging through my wallet to see whether or not I have money to give him, and now I finally get whatever amount of money that I want to give him, I get it already. Now I shut my eyes and I start shuckling and I want to make the bracha, and I want to do it with kavanah, so I say, Asher kedishonu mitzvos v'tzivanu al mitzvahs, Pasach tiftach es yadcha, or al mitzvah satzdaka, whatever I'm going to say. And then by the time I'm done, he's so embarrassed because I was just having so much kavana shuckling over this poor man, so he runs away. So now what do I do? It was a bracha levatela. Not necessarily am I going to find another ani in the next couple of seconds. So therefore, because we have to rely on another person to contribute to our fulfillment of the mitzvah, therefore some Rishonim say that is why we do not recite a bracha here when giving the mitzvah of tzedakah, which is the famous Brisker joke, I've said it in the past. Why the Acharonim say, why is there no mitzvah on Kiddush Hashem? Right? If a person is ever put in a position, God forbid, where they have to give up their life on Kiddush Hashem, why don't they make a bracha before doing so? Asher kiddushanu mitzvos v'tzivanu al Kiddush Hashem. Once again, it's because it's in the hands of others. What if the guy pulls the trigger and there's no bullets in there? So then it turns out it was a bracha levatela. So they say the story about the Brisker who one time had to give up his life al Kiddush Hashem, and he says, just give me 1 minute, I have to make the bracha, and he's sitting there shuckling over there with the kavana, Asher kedushanu mitzvos v'tzivanu al Kiddush Hashem, and then the guy is so scared as he's watching this Brisker make his bracha, he just runs away. And then the Brisker runs after him, he says, nu, it's a hepsik, you know, you gotta kill me. So the same kind of idea. Obviously, it's an apocryphal story, but that's what some of the Rishonim write. This is the reason why a bracha is not recited by the mitzvah of giving tzedakah, because you never know whether or not the person is going to participate along with you in order to enable you to fulfill your mitzvah, and therefore, we do not recite a bracha. There are others who suggest a little bit differently, and they say, the Aruch HaShulchan quotes this, that some suggest, based on the comment of Rabbeinu Bechaya and other Rishonim on Chumash, where they say, What is the text of a bracha that we make? We say, Asher kedushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu. And therefore, some Rishonim say, the only time you can make a bracha is when you're doing an activity that is clear from the activity that's being done, that the only reason I'm doing this is because kedushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu. It's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked me to do it. So shaking a lulav. There's nobody in their right mind that would shake a lulav if not for the fact that the Ribono Shel Olam asked you to do it. There's nobody in their right mind that would sit in a sukkah or would eat matzah on Leil HaSeder if not for the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to do it. And therefore, in all those cases, we say, Asher Kedishanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu, and that is the reason why I'm doing the mitzvah that I'm currently engaged in. However, if you have a mitzvah that we refer to as a mitzvah sichlius, as something that makes sense, for example, when I'm doing the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, it makes sense for a child to give respect and to show honor to their parents. It makes sense that I should be giving tzedakah to the man who's poor, who's walking around the streets and asking people to help him. That makes a lot of sense. That is a mitzvah sichlius. You don't have to be a Jew to understand that that is something that makes a lot of sense to do. That's just a basic tenet of humanity. And therefore, Rabbeinu Bechai says that perhaps we shouldn't make brachos when it comes to a situation where you're doing something that seems to be so natural, that is not unique to somebody who is only a God-fearing Jew. And that is the reason why we don't say Asher Kedushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu when performing a mitzvah like the mitzvah of tzedakah, because this is something that we refer to as perhaps a mitzvah sichlius. It's something that just any person who has a sense of decency, of human care, of human concern, will obviously be engaged in the act of charity, in the act of tzedakah, and therefore perhaps that is why a bracha would not be recited upon the performance of this mitzvah. Now there's an important discussion regarding the Birchas Erisin. When we talk about brachos, we have to think in general about many different brachos and see how they tie into each other. So there's a question. When we come to a wedding, the chasn has to say, Harei ad mekudeshes li. That is the mitzvah of Erisin. That's the mitzvah of being Mekadosh's wife. And the question is, what is to be done about that bracha on the getting married? How are we supposed to view that bracha? What is it all about? There's a major machlokas harishonim. The Rambam assumes that Kiddushin in general, when he gives the wife the ring, and he says, Harei ad mekudeshes li, the Rambam says, you have now fulfilled the mitzvah sasei midaraisa. That is the mitzvah. Ki yikach ish isha. When he's going to take his wife and marry her, that is already considered to be the mitzvah. And the Rush famously disagrees and he says, no, that's not a mitzvah in and of itself. That's a hechsher mitzvah. The real mitzvah is puruvu, that you're supposed to have children, or you're supposed to try to have children. The only way to enable yourself to do that in the proper halachic way is to first do the first step, which is the hechsher mitzvah of the getting married. Once you get married, and now you have fulfilled the requirement of getting that out of the way, that critical component is now taken care of, then you can fulfill the mitzvah of puruvu. But there is no actual mitzvah of kiddushin. So that is the machlokas harishonim about whether or not kiddushin itself is a mitzvah bifnei atzma, or perhaps kiddushin is just a hechsher mitzvah that leads up to something that is far more important than just the act of the kiddushin itself. Well, according to the Rush, this really is not a mitzvah on its own. One has to ask themselves, why would we recite a bracha? What's a bracha all about? The only time we make a bracha is when we actually fulfill a mitzvah, when we are involved in something that is going to bring us to the fulfillment of a mitzvah. But here the Rush says, this is 10 steps removed from a mitzvah. This is just a hechsher mitzvah. This allows us to then go to the next stage, which is the mitzvah of puruvu. So why do we make a bracha when we get married under the chuppah? Yeah. A hechsher mitzvah, yeah. So it's a good question in general. When the Torah says you have a mitzvah of puruvu, and you have somebody who was unable to have children, so does that mean they can never fulfill the mitzvah of puruvu? Does that mean they get no credit at all, even if they've tried? So that's a very important discussion for another time. It's not so relevant to our discussion here, but it is a very critical component to this whole discussion as well. But the Rush has to deal with the question, how do you understand this? If you say that the kiddushin, the act itself of giving the ring to his wife, is not really a mitzvah, then why is a bracha recited? Why do we say a bracha? And the answer that the Rush says is, this is called a birchas hashevach. This is not a birchas hamitzvah. A birchas hamitzvah is, before I blow shofar, I say, Asher kedushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu, lishma kol shofar. Before I light the Chanukah candles, I say, Asher kedushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu, Lahad Gner Shal Chanukah, v'chahena, that's the way we perform all of the mitzvos. we recite a bracha before doing so. But sometimes, writes the Rush, we have what we refer to as a birchas hashevach. It's not a birchas hamitzvah, it is rather a bracha where we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the situation that we're faced with right now. So for example, a birchas hashevach vehoda would be, if a person has the opportunity of going to Niagara Falls and they're overwhelmed by the sight that they see, so you make a birchas hashevach after you see the incredible falls, you make an osam ayse bereshis. After you hear the thunder or you see the lightning, you're going to make a bracha. After you see a rainbow, those are all birchas hashevach, which are said after you've been overwhelmed by the experience that you've had. So too over here, writes the Rush. You're going to make a bracha after the Kiddushim because you're so excited about the fact that God gave us the opportunity to live lives of Kedusha v'Tahara, that God gave us the opportunity to live lives which are elevated from the rest of the world, and therefore we make a birchas hashevach, not a birchas hamitzvah. That is why the bracha is recited afterward, as opposed to being recited before. Let's look at the Rambam in number Aleph. The Rambam here... Birchamitz, yeah. What's the Hechsher? The Rambam here writes, when it talks about Kiddushin, so the Rambam says, Kala Mekadesh Isha, Bein Aide Atzmo, Bein Aide Shaliach. If I'm Mekadesh the woman myself, or I send somebody else as a proxy, I want somebody else to be Mekadesher on my behalf, Tzarech Levarech Kodem HaKiddushin, says the Rambam very clearly, the bracha has to be recited before you do the act of Kiddushin, just like the bracha on the shofar has to be made before you blow the shofar, and the bracha on the candles has to be made before you light the Hanukkah candles, so too, before you get married, you're supposed to make a bracha. And therefore, he says, this would be no different than anywhere else. V'im kidesh v'lo birech, what if you do the act of kiddushin and you forget to make a bracha, writes the Rambam, lo yivarech achar kiddushin. You don't make a bracha afterward, the same way you wouldn't make a bracha after you blew shofar. That's not the way it works. If you don't make a bracha before, too bad, you missed your opportunity. So too, the Rambam says, Kiddushin would be no different. It is the same story. It's a mitzvah like all others, and the bracha has to be recited before the mitzvah is performed, and if you forgot to do the bracha beforehand, you have lost your opportunity to do so. That is the opinion of the Rambam, and that is what the Rambam once again reiterates in the Tshuva. However, Tosus writes in Maseches Pesachim Dav Zayin that is not the case. Tosus disagrees, and he says, we believe that the bracha should be recited after the Kiddushin is over. And the question is why? So Tosus doesn't totally explain why, and that's what you were describing, why that should be the case. But Tosus writes that you should make the bracha afterwards, seemingly because Tosus is of the opinion that this is a birchas hashevach. That is the simplest explanation to give without getting fancy. The simplest explanation to give is, this is a birchas hashevach. And the same way I make a bracha after I see the rainbow, and after I see the big falls, and after I see the Yam HaGadol, and after I experience something amazing, so too over here, after I experience what it means to be a Kaddosh, to be Mekaddish my wife, then I make the Birchas HaShevach of whatever it is that we say at the Chasana. However, the Ravid there has a comment. When the Rambam says you have to make the Bracha before the Kiddushin is done, the Ravid there makes a comment and he says no. The reason why we don't make a Bracha before the wedding is for the same reason we don't make the bracha in other places. Because when you have a mitzvah, which is taloi hadavar bedas acherim, shim temayin ha'isha velo tirtza, what's going to happen? The chasen is standing under the chuppah, and he makes the bracha right before he does the kiddushin, and his wife is looking at him, this guy is nuts. I don't want to marry him, he's crazy. So this is her last opportunity. The parents say, hey, last chance, get out now. And she just runs away. So after he finishes his bracha, and by the way, it's a very long bracha, so after he finishes the bracha, he opens his eyes and he sees no more kala. Writes the Ravid, what are we going to do then? Then it's a bracha levatala. How can we allow that to happen? So therefore the Ravid says, this is why we wait until after to make the bracha. Now that you know that she's accepted, and now that she said, yes, I want to be your wife, and I accept the ring that you give me, and I now consider myself to be mekudesh to you, now, says the Ravid, is when we make the bracha. So, the problem with that is, why don't we do the same by the mitzvah of tzedakah? Some Rishonim say the reason you don't make a bracha by tzedakah is because once you're going to make the bracha, you don't know if the other person is going to actually accept the tzedakah that you're giving them. Well, why don't we say that you should therefore make the bracha after the tzedakah has been accepted? The same way the Ravid says here that you make a bracha after the kiddushin is done, because if you make it before, there's a concern that it won't follow through. So why don't we say the same thing by all these other mitzvahs? Gemilas chasadim, bikur cholim. Maybe the person, you're going to knock on the door, and they're not going to answer. They're not up to company now. So then you weren't mekayim the mitzvah bikur cholim. That's why you don't make a bracha on it, says the Rishonim. So then why don't we follow the same rule that the Ravid says here? That when you have a situation where somebody needs to accept the mitzvah in order for it to be done, why don't we make the bracha after the mitzvah is completed, just like the Ravid suggests we do when it comes to the Birchas Erusin by every wedding that we attend? That is the question that is worth considering. So again, it's not a question when it comes to Kiddush Hashem. Why don't you say after the guy's killed, he should make a bracha why the guy killed him? Okay, that's not appropriate. But the question here is, why don't you make a bracha on the tzedakah or on the gemilas chasadim or the bikur cholim after the mitzvah is completed, the same way the Ravid says you should make a bracha after one has done the mitzvah of kiddushin by a wedding? So that is just something to consider, something to think about. The second half of the shiur, as I mentioned, I want to talk about the question that was asked last week. Are we allowed to accept stolen money for the purposes of tzedakah? And this is a very uncomfortable question to think about, but unfortunately it happens all the time. And the question is this something that is appropriate? Should we ever allow ourselves to accept this kind of charity money that's being given by somebody who's a dishonest person, who is not really accumulating all of that wealth honestly and legally? Is that something that we can stand by and watch, or perhaps we have to reject that kind of money? So there is a medrash on the pasuk in Mishlei, number Gimel. The pasuk says, Yad liyad lo yinake ra. What does that mean, says the medrash? Bo re'eh, shtei yadayim yesh lo la'adam. Everybody was created with two hands. And therefore, says the Medrash, im gonev ba'achas, if you steal with one hand, v'nosei tzedakah ba'acheres, and you give charity with the other hand, lo yinake, don't think that that is going to whitewash all of the terrible things that you've done. If you stole the money, you're a ganav. And if you want to give tzedakah, it's not going to take away the problem. You have to give the money back to wherever you stole it from. And if there's anything left afterward, then we can start discussing whether or not you can give charity, whether or not we can accept your charity. But, says the Medrash, if you don't do that first, this is something that we absolutely cannot tolerate at all. And therefore the Shulchan Aruch writes in Yerodeya, in Hilchos Tzedakah, Siman Reish Mem Ches, that we have a general principle. We have an assumption, this is not something that we think about today because we don't really have slaves. We don't have avadim today. But the Shulchan Aruch says, in the times when they had avadim, the assumption was that these people were from the lower echelons of society. They were not honest. You can never trust them. They were stealing from other people all the time, and they knew they would never get caught. And in such a case, writes the Shulchan Aruch, if an Eved comes to you and says, I'd like to contribute a certain amount of money to a whatever cause it might be, a cause that's a worthy and legitimate cause, you don't have a right to accept the money because you have to assume that it came to them illegally. You have to assume that this money is not really rightfully theirs, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch writes, we are never able to accept money from Avadim for charity because we assume that it is gezel. We assume that that money is stolen. And this is really based on a comment already that the Gemara in Baba Kama writes as well. And the Rishonim there explained, why is it that we cannot accept? Because we cannot show that we approve or we support or condone such activity. We have to absolutely show how much we're opposed to this kind of behavior, and we cannot be forthcoming about legitimizing or justifying or rationalizing the terrible activities that they were involved in. The Ramban writes on Chumash, there's an Isser in Chumash called Esnan Zona Umechir Kelev. And Esnan Zona means if you have a prostitute and somebody gave her something as a gift for her services, sorry that we're talking about that in a shir, but it happens. So the Torah actually discusses that case, and the Torah says if she later on wants to give that, whatever item it is, if she wants to give it to the Beis HaMikdash, we are not allowed to accept it because it came to her as payment for the horrible activity of prostitution. And secondly, the Gemara also lumps that together with a Mechir Kelev. If somebody makes an exchange for a dog, if I own a dog, means a wild dog, and I now sell it to somebody else and they give me something in exchange for it, I'm not allowed to take that animal to the Beis HaMikdash as a carbon. So it sounds very arbitrary. What's the connection between these two halachos? And why they put one next to the other? Explains the Rabban, I'll tell you why. Bitama Iser. Why do we have a reason not to accept if a woman had this terrible part of her life and she got whatever payment that she got, but now try to give money to charity. She wants to give the money to the Beis HaMikdash. What's so bad about that? Why can't we accept it? Says the Ramban. I'll explain to you why. Because Shahazonas Yasu Be'es Nanan Shalahem Mitzvos. If you're going to allow this woman, who is a prostitute, to take whatever money she has and give it to the Beis HaMikdash, Choshvos, they think, Lechaper Al Chatasam. They think that that is going to atone for all the terrible things that they've done, and they think that that is a compensation for their kind of terrible behavior. And we have to show them that that will not rectify your terrible behavior at all. And we will absolutely not accept your behavior. And therefore, the Ramban writes, V'lachein asra ha-Torah, that is why the Torah said it is unacceptable. And he says, why is it that we have this avera of mechir kelev? So he says, you have people who raise wild animals, who destroy everybody's property, and then they sell it to somebody else. And they realize, you know, I did some things wrong, so let me just give whatever money I made on the sale, let me give it to the Beis HaMikdash. No! We need you to understand that you did something terrible. You raised wild animals in a community, you destroyed other people's property, you bothered their privacy, you bothered everything about this community, you ruined it. And therefore, we do not accept whatever it is that you think you're going to overcompensate now. It is not something that we're able to say is acceptable as far as the charity cause is concerned. The Beis HaLevi has a very important comment in the very beginning of Parshas Truma. And let's read it together, because the Beis HaLevi there writes, the first pasuk in Parshas Truma tells us, Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'yikhu li truma, me'ez kalish asher yidvenu libo tekhu es truma si. So we know that this was the instruction to collect the money for the purposes of building a Mishkan. Now says the Beis HaLevi, hinei, Ba parshazu acharei parshas mishpatim. Isn't that curious, says the Beis HaLevi, that this instruction of collecting the money for the Beis HaMikdash comes immediately following parshas mishpatim. And he makes an assumption that there has to be a connection between parshas mishpatim and parshas truma. So I don't know if we have that assumption in every parsha. I don't know. You have to figure out what the connection is. But the Beis HaLevi here says, the betchila, the reason why is because first, kodem sheyase adam tzedaka b'mamono. Before one engages in the act of giving charity, you have to first make sure tzarach liros shelo yiyeh b'mamono chashash gezel. Before being engaged in the act of charity and being the kindest person in the neighborhood and having your name all over the buildings, says the Beis HaLevi, we first want to make sure that you know that all of your money is really rightfully deserving to you. We want to make sure that you got that money al pi halacha, and you didn't steal from anybody else. And therefore, writes the Beis HaLevi, before we get into the conversation about who's going to donate to the Beis HaMikdash and who's going to build that Mishkan, we first have to teach Klal Yisrael about the rules of Choshen Mishpat. We first need to teach them what are the proper ways that we need to interact with other people's property and with our money, and when we are employed by someone else and when we employ others. Is all the money that we actually accumulate deserving to us, or perhaps is it not? Writes the Beis HaLevi, after we've taken care of that, and after we know that all of it really is rightfully deserving to ourselves, then we can say, V'yikhali truma. That's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want your charity, and I want it to the Beis HaMikdash, and I want you to be the great, kind-hearted philanthropist who's going to give all the money to charity. Wonderful. But if you don't know how to do that first, says the Beis HaLevi, then the whole discussion of the Yikhuli Truma does not get off the ground. Yes, question. When the Ramban said before, the reason why we don't accept money from this Esnan, from this Zona, why don't we take her money? She's doing something good, so why can't we just bifurcate and say, look, she has two different parts of her lives, and one of them is good and one of them is bad? No, says the Ramban, because you're showing them that it's okay, that we can justify your actions by accepting your money. And what would seem from the Ramban is that this is a twofold problem. Number one, I'm not allowed to give illegal funds. And number two, we are not allowed to accept illegal funds because this is something that we are not allowed to show that we approve of in any way at all. Yeah. So Rav Moshe actually has a tshuva here in the Igros Moshe. It's in Chelek Choshen Mishpat Chelek Beis. And here it's a very powerful tshuva where he addresses the yeshivas who unfortunately take advantage and cheat the government programs. And Rav Moshe, I think it's important for us to read it because Rav Moshe here discusses something that unfortunately we hear about too often. So he says, Be'isir lemosdos ha-Torah likach mehem amshala yoser mikafi ha-tanayim shakava. The government has allotted a certain amount of money toward each school based on the amount of students that they have, based on the amount of services that they provide. And therefore, he says, do I have a right as a yeshiva to try to get around the system? And do I have a right to try and fudge the numbers and say, no, we have more students, we give more services, even though we know that that is certainly not the truth. He says, we live in America, that God has given us the opportunity to rebuild ourselves. And not only have we had religious freedoms here and we've been able to build our own communities, but he says the government is even willing to chip into our school system, and the government is willing to give us textbooks and to give us lunch programs and all these different things, writes Rav Moshe. Obviously, number one, the first paragraph is, we need to be makir tov to our Medina. And we need to realize what a blessing it is that we live in this country, and they give us all of the incredible things that they do, and all of the rights and privileges that American citizens have. That's paragraph number one. Skip to paragraph number two. Aval vaday. Although that is true that we are lucky to be living in this government and under this rulership and in this community, anachnu mizharim me'Hashem yizbarach shetzivanu b'sarasa hakadosha. We were warned by God Himself, lihizar milikach yoser mikafish atanai hamamshala kavulitein. If the government said, this is all that you are worthy of getting, this is all you qualify for based on the numbers and based on whatever it is that the government has decided, writes Rav Moshe, av sheyicholim lahasig yoser me'ezer pakidim sheyirtzu lehetev lahem. Of course I can bribe and I can sweet talk somebody who works in the office there to fudge the numbers for me and to go along with whatever scheme I'm doing. It happens. And Rav Moshe says, maybe you'll get away with it. And maybe the government will sign off a bigger check because of your good public relations that you have with them. However, writes Rav Moshe, when it's shalok ha'tanoim ha'kevuim, when it's not based on the rules and regulations that the government has set out for us, kol sheken she'asel l'shaker b'misper ha'talmidim u'chadomeh, can you imagine, writes Rav Moshe, that you're actually going to lie about the number of students that you have in your school? Who would do such a thing? And Rav Moshe writes, even though the reason you're doing it is because we want to educate more children, and we want our yeshivas to stay open, and we have all the best of intentions in the world, and it's all for the causes of charity. Nobody's pocketing the money. This is a not-for-profit. But still, writes Rav Moshe, you have no right to do that. Because after all, that is not kosher money. And if it's not kosher money, he says, that will undermine everything that a yeshiva is meant to be about. Don't we know that our institutions, where we send our children, our shuls, where we all daven, our places that we consider to be holy, don't we know that those places need to be places that are above board on everything that they do? And therefore, writes Rav Moshe, what right does anybody have to be involved in such activity where they know that it is dishonest the way the money has come in? So I think it's a very important shuva. Not that we need to remind ourselves of it too often, but I think once in a blue moon, it's important that we do think about this. And Rav Moshe writes in that last paragraph, you'll see it's bolded, that's the next side. So Rav Moshe finishes off the paragraph, and he basically says that this is something that is totally unacceptable. You look at the Mesilas Yesharim, the Ramchal writes as well about this idea. And he gets into what exactly is the work ethic of somebody who has a boss, somebody who is hired to do a job. And I often think about this. You know, sometimes you go visit somebody's office, and you see, especially today, you know, sometimes I speak in Citibank once a month. And I'm always interested there. When we go to the room where we have the Lunch and Learn program, where we have the shiur, so you always pass by a number of secretaries, a number of people sitting at their desk. And inevitably, you're always going to see people who are shopping online, who are doing all kinds of things. So I assume in our day and age, every employer understands that there's a certain amount of time per day that their employees are going to be wasting time and shopping online and taking breaks and doing whatever they do and davening mincha and having a shiur and whatever, you know, I don't know. You know, we once had, there was somebody, I used to give a shiur when I was in the White Shul, I used to give a shiur on Thursday afternoons on the phone at 12:30. Every week it was at 12:30. It was a parsha shiur for 15 minutes. So there was somebody in the neighborhood who called me up and they were very upset about it. And they said they want me to discontinue the shiur. I said, why? They said, we have an office. And all of a sudden at 12:30, a number of our employees just pick up the phone and they start listening to your shiur. What right do they have to do that? We have an office we have to run. 12:30 is not a time where we just want everybody dropping what they're doing and listening to your shiur. This is not appropriate. So they wanted me to stop the shiur. Now that's a very inappropriate request. You figure out how to get your employees under control. It's not my problem. And they can, you know, that's your issue with them. But it's true. An employer does have the right to say, right now you're on my time and you have to go by the rules. And there's a certain understanding that we have of what's acceptable and what's not. So the Mesilas Yesharim writes, one has to be careful because if we overstep those boundaries and we don't understand what the expectations are of our employers, perhaps, writes the Mesilas Yesharim, we also are engaged in the act of gzela. We also are taking a paycheck that is not deserving to us. And therefore, he writes, this is something that we need to be very careful about as well, and it's something that often we overlook. Look at the third paragraph here, where the Mesilas Yesharim writes, "V'lo od." Not only does an employee have to be very careful about the time they spend at work and to make sure that they dedicate themselves as much as they can, like the Rambam says, that a poel, somebody who's a hired worker, has to be oved b'chol kocho. I have to give it my all, even though I know that I'm so talented and I'm so much smarter and I can take care of what other people do in an entire day's work, I can do in half a day's work. If somebody employed me to do work in their office and they want me to be in the office from a certain time to a certain time, I have to give it my all. And I don't have a right to say, well, I can do it in half the amount of time and therefore I can spend the rest of the day, you know, shopping online or doing whatever it is that I want to do. That is not something that we have a right to excuse ourselves for. And therefore, writes the Ramchal in the Mesilas Yesharim, "V'lo od, ela sha'afilu im asa mitzvah bizman melachto." Let's say I'm at work and I'm not shopping online. And the reason why I'm not paying attention to my job is because I want to do a mitzvah. So I want to run on that hatzalah call, and I want to go ahead and be involved in this chesed and be mevaker choleh, and I want to have the shir, and I want to dial into this, and I want to, whatever I'm doing. It's all mitzvahs, it's wonderful. Writes the Ramchal, "Lo litzdaka techashev lo, ela aveira hi biyado." So you can be involved in the act of gezel, and you say, I rationalize my behavior because I say the reason why I'm doing it is really because, look, I want to learn, and I want to this, and I want to that, and I want to help this person who's sick, and that woman's getting divorced, and this one needs help with this thing, and a medical referral, and they need, everybody needs everything. And he says, you have all the best of intentions in the world, the bottom line is you're a gazla. That's the bottom line. And don't forget that. And writes the Mesilas Yesharim, "Lo litzdaka techashev lo," you don't get credit. There's no chesed involved there, there's no tzedakah involved in that money that you got from that. All of that is plain, flat-out gezel. Now, it's possible, just to save ourselves, it's possible that our employers are happy that we are members of Hatzalah and that we're running out to save lives and that sometimes we're going to go do that Bikur Cholim and sometimes we're going to help other people. Maybe. But that's something that you have to have a conversation with your employer about to know whether or not they really have that expectation of you, or do they expect that you're going to be solely focused on the work that you're supposed to be doing and you don't have a right to be all over the place at the time that they're paying you for your services. It's a very important observation that the Mesilas Yesharim writes, and I think today in our society it gets overlooked a little bit. Now, what's clear from all of these achronim is, and there's so much more to discuss, but I see we're almost out of time, what's clear from all of this is that if somebody steals money and then wants to take that money and give it to charity, you get no credit. Nothing. That's not called tzedakah. That's called a mitzvah ba'aveira. The Ramban writes, we should not accept it because we are sort of showing that we condone this kind of behavior and we accept it, and we absolutely should not. But one very important question is the following. We know in halacha many times that we have the concept of asei docha lo sase. And I know this question is going to sound ridiculous, but it's actually a good question. It's the question of the Chasam Sofer and of the Sholem Meshiv and many other achronim who are known to be great talmidei chachamim. So don't laugh at the question. We have a concept of asei docha lo sase. Where do we have that? What's the classic example that the Gemara gives? Milan Shabbos. So I have a conflict. On the one hand, on Shabbos, you have certain rules and regulations of how you're supposed to act. On the other hand, it says, Bayom HaShmini Yimol B'Sar HaLosam. On the eighth day, you have to do the Bris Milah. So what do I do when I have this conflict? So the Gemara says, asei docha lo sase. You have a mitzvah Bris Milah. That overrides the isser of doing malacha on Shabbos. The Gemara talks about in Yevamos Daf Vav, we have the case of Kilayim B'Bigdei Kuhuna. The Torah says you're not allowed to wear shatnez. Tzemru pishtim yachtav. You're not allowed to have wool and linen woven together. At the same time, the Torah also says that the Bigdei Kuhuna have to be made out of shatnez. So what am I supposed to do? I'm a Kohen. I have to make shatnez, but the Torah said not to wear shatnez. So in such a case, we say, Hasei dochelos hasei, that the mitzvah of wearing Bigdei Kuhuna will outweigh the aveira of wearing the shatnez. Many, many different examples. What's the same about all those examples, just take the ones that we gave. Bris Milah versus Shabbos, and Bigdei Kuhuna versus Kilayim, versus Shatnez. Both of those cases are similar in the fact that what we're talking about is two mitzvahs that are mitzvah shebein adam lamakom. The Ribbono Shel Olam told me not to wear Shatnez. The Ribbono Shel Olam told me I should wear the Bigdei Kuhuna. The Ribbono Shel Olam told me not to do malacha on Shabbos, but he also told me that I should do a bris milah on the eighth day. Those are all between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in such a case, God tells you, asei docha lo sase. Let's try to change up the case. What happens when you have a bein adam lachavero that is in conflict with a bein adam lamakom? For example, the Gemara says in Bava Metzia on Daf Lamed, I happen to be a Kohen, and I'm not allowed to go into a cemetery. I'm not allowed to be Metame Lemesim. But I see that somebody lost a suitcase in the cemetery, and I see it says their name on it. And if I leave it there, maybe someone's going to steal it. So I want to go into the cemetery in order to be Mekayim the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Now Hashavas Aveda is a mitzvah Shemein Adam Lachaveiro. So am I allowed to violate the Los Aseh of Tumas Kohanim in order to fulfill the mitzvah Aseh of Hashavas Aveda? Why is it not the same time?
You have to return as the person.
Okay, so it's a technicality issue there. But in general, would you say yes or no? Take for another example. You have a problem with that issue? Take for another example. The Torah says, if somebody rapes a woman, what is the punishment for that person? Aside from whatever he has to pay, he has to offer, which is wild, but the Torah says he has to offer, velosi elisha. He has to offer that he's going to be her husband. Now, which woman who was just raped wants to marry that guy? I don't know exactly, but the Torah says he has to at least offer that he is going to marry her if she so chooses to marry him. But he at least has to put himself out there and say that he's willing to do it. What happens if you have the mitzvah that the Torah says, "Velo siya le'isha," you did that, you got to go and marry that woman. The problem is, she is one of the Isurei Bia. She's a sister, she's a mother, she's somebody who I'm not allowed to be married to, as nauseating as that is. He's a Kohen, she's a Grusha, whatever it might be. What would you say in a situation like that? So the Gemara clearly says, the rule is, that when you're talking about something like that, which is a mitzvah Shebein Adam Lachaveiro, it's between me and you, you're not able to take a mitzvah Shebein Adam Lachaveiro and override a mitzvah Shebein Adam Lamakom. God is more important. And therefore we assume that you cannot overlook the Aveira of Tumas Kohanim in order to do Hashavas Aveda. And you cannot overlook the mitzvah of the Isra of marrying people who you're not allowed to marry, Isurei Bia, because of the mitzvah of Elosi Elisha. What if it goes in the other direction? What if it goes in the other direction? What would you say when you have a mitzvah Shebein Adam Lachaveiro versus a mitzvah Shebein Adam Lamakom that is going against a mitzvah Shebein Adam Lachaveiro? For example, the Mishnah Maseches Sukkah on Daf Chav Tes says, it comes the Yantav of Sukkos, and I don't have a lulav. I have a mitzvah Shebein Adam Lamakom to shake a lulav, but I don't have any way to do it unless I steal money from someone. So why don't we apply the principle of Aseh Dochelos Aseh? So why don't you say, I want to do the mitzvah of giving tzedakah, I want to support the yeshiva, and I want to give money to the school, and I want to give money to the shul, and I want to do all these wonderful things and support all the aniyim in the neighborhood. The problem is I don't have money. So wouldn't it make sense that I should go and steal from someone in order that I should be able to be mekayim the mitzvah? Aseh dochelos aseh. Sounds like a crazy question. It can't be. It can't be. But why?
It's not the same time.
Why is it not the same time? Yeah.
So in order to fulfill the mitzvah of the Lamakom,
It doesn't make sense. Of course it doesn't make sense, and the answer is of course you can't. But why not? So the Chasam Sofer discusses this in Maseches Sukkah Daf Mem Beis. Writes the Chasam Sofer, Lo Shayech Aseh Dochelos Aseh, Ela Bima Shebein Adam Lamakom. The only time you say Aseh Dochelos Aseh is when you're talking about Mila versus Shabbos, when you're talking about Big Day Kuhuna versus Shatnez. Those are both mitzvahs that are Bein Adam Lamakom. That's God's business. And He told you the rule is in that case that the Aseh overrides the Los Aseh. However, writes the Chasam Sofer, Aval Yolam, Lo Yidcha Aseh as Los Aseh the Gezel, L'kayim Mitzvah Aseh B'maman Chavero, Ze Lo Ala Al Das Me Olam. That's inconceivable. What are you going to tell me? A guy doesn't have a pair of tefillin. So he'll go to his neighbor, he'll steal money from the safe deposit box, and he'll go buy himself a pair of tefillin. And when the police come to arrest him, he'll say, what do you mean? What was I supposed to do? Aseh Dochelos Aseh. What should I do? It's not my fault. God wants me to wear a tefillin every day. I happen not to have a pair. So I went to steal money from him in order to buy myself a tefillin. I went right before Sukkos. I don't have a lulav, so what do? I went to somebody else. I stole his lulav. They come and ask you, did you steal our lulav? Yeah, of course I did. I don't deny it. Aseh Dochelos Aseh. That's what I was supposed to do. Right? That's inconceivable. That's crazy. How can that be? So he writes, the only time Aseh Docha Lo Aseh applies is when you're talking about two mitzvahs that are Ben Adam Lamakom. But when Ben Adam Lachaveru starts getting involved, it's a whole different discussion. And we cannot make the mistake and think that you're able to mix and match and do whatever you want in a case like that. And I think that that really is a very important component to this discussion as well. A person can say to themselves, and they can rationalize, okay, so I got the money illegally, and maybe I cheated my boss, maybe I wasn't as honest in the business as I should have been, and maybe I did something that was against the government regulations, and maybe, and all these things, but in the end of the day, at least I gave the tzedakah, so I do the mitzvah. Aseh do halos aseh. At least b'dieved you should say, that the aseh of the tzedakah overrides whatever terrible act I was involved in violating the los aseh, writes the Chasam Sofer, that is inconceivable, so much so that he writes, lo ala al das me'olam, nobody would be as crazy as to think that way. And therefore writes the Chasam Sofer, as crazy as it is to say that I should go when I don't have a pair of tefillin and steal money from my neighbor to buy myself a pair of tefillin, and as crazy as it is to say that I should go steal money before Sukkot to buy a lula for myself, that's inconceivable. Why is it any less appropriate to say that if somebody stole money, we should not accept that as a tzedakah pledge, as a tzedakah contribution? It's the same thing. What are you going to say? Aseh do halos aseh. What are you going to say? That his action of giving tzedakah now outweighs the terrible negative act of what he did of stealing the money? Of course not. That doesn't whitewash all of the previous activities he was involved in. And therefore writes the Chasam Sofer, lo ala al das me'olam. It's ridiculous. It's preposterous to say such a thing. And he writes, and this is something that we need to keep in mind, that when we talk about giving tzedakah, it's obviously a very important value that we need to get used to, and it's something that we should all be comfortable with, but at the same time, we all have to be very, very careful about where that money comes from. And we have to make sure, like the Beis Halevi says, before you can get into a discussion about V'yikuli truma, about dedicating yourself to the Beis HaMikdash and pledging money to all the wonderful causes in the neighborhood, you first have to make sure that you've mastered Parshas Mishpatim. You first have to make sure that all the money that you have is legal money, that everything that you have is clean money, and that you have not taken advantage of anybody else in order to get that money, and you haven't stolen from anybody else, you haven't tried to do illegal things to get the money. Like Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva, people who run schools and who run these kinds of schemes and try to fudge the numbers in order they should get more money, and they're well-intentioned perhaps because they want that more kids should go to yeshiva and we should be able to give more services, right? So Moshe, there is no excuse for such a thing. The government is nice enough to give us anything and they have rules and regulations. We need to follow that. And if somebody takes it, he says, what do you think that is going to instill into our children? Do you think children that are growing up in a school that runs like that, do you think the children are going to come out being Yirei Shamayim? Being Talmidei Chachamim, how could it be? It's impossible for them to come out that way when the foundation of the chinuch that they're getting is something that is so flawed and is so wrong and is so unethical. And therefore, Moshe writes, it's something that we need to think about. Whenever we discuss the issue of tzedakah, we need to think about this point first. This is something that we need to really consider very carefully, both on the end of the one who's giving, whether his money is kosher, and on the end of the person who is receiving. Do we have a right to accept this money if the person is such a questionable person?